Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 137th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Rifat Zaidi. This is his second time on New Mainers Speak. He was here originally January of 2016 for show number 90. And if you wish to listen back, you can hear it in the archives. Since 2002, Rifat has practiced as an orthopedic surgeon at Miles Memorial Hospital in Damariscotta, Maine, and is originally from Lahore, Pakistan. Thank you so much for joining the show again, Rifat.
Thank you for inviting me again today on this holiest day in the Christian calendar, and I would like to extend my warm wishes to all people celebrating Easter.
Thank you. That's very lovely. I was talking with someone this morning and wondering about why there are two Easters.
I do not know. I don't know why Easter eggs are there or Easter bunnies are there either.
So Easter's not your thing.
Easter is not my thing.
But we certainly can extend warm wishes. I understand it's a calendar thing. When the calendars changed, some Christians changed with it and some did not. And so there are two different Easters, Eastern Orthodox.
I guess there are two different Christmases too, based on what previous Pope said, because the Christ was not born on 25th of December, according to the previous Pope.
So, whatever day you're celebrating, it's going to be 80 degrees in the Portland area today. We're celebrating, whether you're looking for eggs or enjoying your family's company.
Yes.
So, a lot has happened in the year since we visited. You were pretty prophetic when you forecasted that Donald Trump would win the election and people would, quote unquote, accept that because that's what we do in this country. And you also added that there would be an unintentional consequence from his negative Muslim rhetoric. And you thought that people would come to see his comments as inaccurate based on what they know of the people who practice Islam around them. So I'd love it if you could say more about this. First, the rhetoric. And second, let's look at what Muslims in America are all about from your perspective. So what kinds of things have you heard from this administration about your faith of Islam?
Well, people have spoken, and he's the president, and he's here for 4 years, and that's not going to change. So we have all got to learn to live with that. So initially when he started, I think there was a lot of negativity regarding the Muslims and the travel ban and all everything else related to that. But I think in the last few weeks, I haven't heard anything really terrible, because I think he is realizing that governing a country and the world is a lot more than what he was saying in the campaign trail. And I think the burden of the government is on his shoulders now. So he's much quieter. And I think he's realizing that he cannot change everything the way he wanted it to.
It's tremendously difficult.
It is extremely difficult. I
mean. Yeah. But when you hear things said about Islam, what's that like for you? You have your own reality of how the Muslim faith plays out in your life and in your beliefs. And then you hear things that are not complimentary or maybe inaccurate. And I wonder what you do with that.
Well, people's perspective is what they see or they hear. So they are, so to speak, two Islams. One, what they see, this the mullah-generated, non-educated people who have been brainwashed, and they are the source of trouble, whether they are ISIS or Taliban or the Boko Haram. So whichever country they are in, so they are those brainwashed people. And then there are the enlightened, moderate Muslims who are all over the world, and they are practicing their religion. If you go back into the start of the religion, there are two things in the Islamic tradition. One is hukukullah, That means your duties towards God, and then hukukul ibad, which is your duties towards your fellow humans. So the duty towards God are saying five prayers a day, doing fasting once a year. But everything else is about your fellow humans. And that's where the religion came in. It wanted to bring sanity into the society. It was not meant for anything else. It wanted people should not kill each other. People should not rape and pillage. So everybody should have rights. And this is what Islam brought, or this is what Islam and the religion which preceded Islam, the Judaism and Christianity. Muslims, you cannot be a Muslim unless you're a Christian and a Jew at the same time. People don't understand this thing, that most of the Muslims who say their prayer, they talk, they send their blessings on people who are the followers of Muhammad and the followers of Abraham. So who are the followers of Abraham? These are the Christians and the Jews. So each prayer, each Muslim actually sends blessings on these people, but then in real life, they don't understand that they are actually trying to do bad things to these people. So it's not really, it doesn't make sense.
Basically, we're all one.
We are.
Yeah.
We are. So see, the problem with religion is, again, trying to understand the religion and why you need a religion. I have explained this in a very simple way to my kids, that people are going on the interstate, sitting in their cars, going somewhere. We don't know where they are going. They don't know where we are going. And the same thing is happening in real life, because we don't know why we are here and we don't know where we are going to. But we all want to get there with the least amount of bother and the least amount of aggravation to others. And that's what religion teaches us, that you should not be in other people's way. Let them do what they want to do, and let the law enforcement, which in religion cases, if you believe in God, that's what religion is, that there is one entity who created this and one entity who controls this. So let that entity deal with other people. So we do not want any accident or mishaps on our way to wherever we are going.
That's a fantastic metaphor. And I'm likely to think about you a lot when I'm driving on 95 now.
Thank you. Don't get a ticket, though.
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful. So how are negative stereotypes influencing the thoughts and actions of the American public, the average American these days, would you say?
I think since January oath-taking, I believe there's a lot more interest developed by the ordinary Americans to know more about the religion. And we saw this in Boston. Mm-hmm. We saw it at all the airports where when the travel ban was implemented, all these people, they just flocked and they tried to help, because this was an unjust way of dealing with something. Yes, I understand the perspective that when somebody looks at a person of color, they think that these are terrorists. I mean, look what happened to these two poor guys who were just having a pint, and they were killed in cold blood by this man. They were Hindus, IT engineers. And so somebody became the judge and the jury and the executioner. That should not happen. And this is why the religions came, that you should not do this. Unfortunately, these incidents keep happening. It just recently happened in Pakistan. There was a university student who was killed for blasphemy by his university co-students in the dorms. Just recently, he was beaten to death.
And blasphemy can just be saying, and you don't believe, or asking questions, right?
I believe there were 65 cases of blasphemy in Pakistan. But who proves and who can say this was blasphemy or not? So you cannot just take law in your own hands. You cannot say that I do not like you and I'm going to have you killed. Okay, so you are inciting trouble, and that should never happen. Absolutely no reason that it should happen.
Because when it's not organized and orderly, it scares people.
It does.
And it scares people to talk and to speak up and to seek help.
And it is one of the Islamic beliefs that once you have, you should choose wisely. That's what they say. You should choose by consensus. You should choose your leaders by consensus and wisely. But once you have chosen, you have to stick with them, because let them do their job. Their authority has to be implemented. Okay, if they are unjust, that's a different situation. But who will decide that they are unjust? Then you need to have a rule of law. If you do not have a rule of law, then there is a problem. And lack of education and lack of resources in the third world countries, they have an issue because of this reason, because people do not find justice. And in most of these countries, people, if they have any problem, any inheritance issues, they can spend years and years going to court without any justice. And that brings people back to the basics. They take justice in their own hand and deal with that the way that happens.
Yes, if you don't have justice, then there's a vacuum.
You have to have justice.
Yeah. Because last time you were on, you spoke about the power of education. And I wonder about the relationship with the power of education and justice together. Some people in Pakistan receive world-class educations and others none at all. And how does that play out in the faith and in the culture?
Last night I was watching this very interesting documentary. It was called
Among the Believers?
Among the Believers. It came out in 2015. And it actually depicts a very true actual happening. It's a it's factual. And you will see in that documentary that people are so poor that they cannot afford education. The state does not provide education for them. And what happens is that these seminaries or madrasas have kind of multiplied. And before 1979, I believe there were only 6,000 madrasas registered. Now there are 40,000 or 50,000 madrasas. And the kids are left by their parents because they multiply without any good medical advice regarding family planning and birth control. So they have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kids. And what do? They cannot provide for them. So they leave them in these seminaries for so-called education. And that education actually in this documentary is depicted very nicely, that how they are brainwashed and what they are taught. They are basically taught to learn the Quran by rote, basically, which is a good thing. There's nothing bad about it. But most of these students, they never actually realize what those words mean, unfortunately. Yes, they have mugged up the whole book, but they do not understand the message in that book. And when these people come out, when they become adults, that's where the problem happens, because they try to implement the same what they have learned from, you know, doing the practical exactly the way they were taught.
Yeah.
So the education has to be a non-biased education, which should be useful. You cannot just get a child into medical school at age 5. You cannot make an engineer at age 5. You have to have the building blocks. You have to go step by step so that your foundation is strong, and then you build on that. If somebody wants to do whatever they want to do, so they want to be a filmmaker, or they want to be a physician, or they want to be an engineer, or whoever they want to be, they can do whatever they want to do with that education. But if you force that whatever your way of thinking is onto those children, you should not expect anything else except what's happening these days in this part of the world.
Yes, and they're not just learning the Quran. They're preparing themselves for jihad.
And I'm not saying this, but you actually have to watch this movie to realize what those kids are saying. And it is really harrowing.
Well, you let me know that you had just watched this movie last night, and I tried to watch some of it today, the Among the Believers movie.
Yes.
And I will link to that from my website and Facebook page in case people listening want to follow up on this. It was actually hugely instructive to see how you raise someone to be a jihadist.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's very informative.
It is.
And where it's sponsored
and
if how
you look
works.
At all the people who are suicide bombers, they are kids 14, 15, 16, 17 years of age who have been brainwashed that they will go directly into heaven and they will have a crown on their head and they will have this and they will have that.
That part really struck me, Rifat.
Yes.
You know, these children are so poor and they learn if they memorize the Quran, when they die, they can have a crown with special jewels.
That's right.
And that really speaks to the 10-year-old who's just entering one of these madrasas.
Yes, somebody who has nothing and they are given this awesome final whatever departure gift. Okay, Pakistan government raided a few years ago and they found this place where these kids were kept and they had these murals on the walls about the heaven. They were getting prepared for heaven. Okay, this is what heaven will look like. Unfortunately, that's not true.
And yes, this is so brainwashing isn't just tossed around lightly. It's a practice.
That's right.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. My guest today is Rifat Zaidi. He's a surgeon, a husband, a father, a Muslim, an American. And he's been sharing what it means to him to practice Islam. And now we get to hear how his faith supports his volunteer work, which is a girls' school and a vocational training center in the Punjab region of Pakistan called Basti Awan. Rifat, this school was started in a region where previously there were no schools at all, and now women are educated through the vocational program and support schooling for their daughters. How did you get involved in this effort?
So my medical school, alma mater, Rawalpindi Medical College, Overseas Foundation, and I'm one of the founding members of that, we got involved in this construction of this area after 2009 floods in the Indus River, where almost 25% of the land in Pakistan was underwater. So we started looking at what we could do as a group to help. And we decided to go as close to the Indus River and as far away as we could from Islamabad or Lahore. And we built about 322 homes for those people. And there was no girls' school in this area. So what we did was we built two girls' schools. And one was taken over by another organization, and they run that school. I actually run the school that we have. It is in Basti Awan in Darya Khan near Bhakkar, which is on the east bank of River Indus. And it is the poorest of the poor areas. And there was no school in this area for girls, absolutely zero. So we did not. And I think I'm speaking on behalf of all my fellow from the alma mater, and we decided that girls' education was more important than boys' education, because by educating a girl, you are actually educating the whole family. And we built this school, and we are running it. The cost of running is like about $1,500. We provide books, we provide uniforms, shoes, socks, and sweaters in winters. And the curriculum that we follow is basically based on government of Punjab. So we have nothing to do with the curriculum. We do not want to change the curriculum in any way for people to think that we are forcing one type or the other.
$1,500 a month?
Just for that school, yes.
A month?
A month.
Okay.
Which is not a whole lot.
No.
But making that payment every month is a problem.
Yes.
Yeah, and we have just decided. The first time, actually, I visited this place after the groundbreaking was just like last month. And I almost had tears in my eyes when I went in there. And you can put a link of that on my page here. And there's a picture of that school. And that school could be anywhere in Pakistan, even in the most modern places. And it was so nice to see these 123 girls. They had a presentation for us. It was an annual day for them at the end of their session, which ends in March. And we were in awe, because one of the girls actually made a presentation. We had some non-Urdu speaking people with us, so they made a presentation in English. So there was an English speech in English, and you could actually see there four or five girls, they had so much spark, and they would go such a long way. Obviously, you know, you get everybody in the school, and I think most of these girls will have something to look back to, you know, when they grow up and they say, well, you know, when they're becoming mothers themselves, and that would make a better person, and those families will, I think, improve. And I spoke to the people who contributed to us locally, one of the guys who actually donated his land to us for the purpose of the school, and he wanted to give us more land to expand the school, to take it up to the high school level, because we know and they know that when these girls come out of school, they need to be completely educated, at least up to a high school, and then it's up to them if they want to pursue whatever they want to pursue after that. Unfortunately, we do not have the capability. We are not a big organization. We are just a simple collection of people who are a charity.
Yes, but I think there's a little bit of backstory here which makes this make a lot more sense and makes it more poignant, which is you actually wanted to go into public health in Pakistan when you were done. That's what you wanted to do, and you couldn't do that. And so you're here, and you think, how can I help there? And you go back and start this girls' school, which is a terrific juxtaposition to what's going on in the madrasas, where they're training on radical right. And here you're giving girls an opportunity to have some control of their own lives, which is...
Our aim is to give them a non-biased basic foundation education. We are not there for anything else. And we'll, you know, I would love to see what happens to these girls down the road and what happens to that area. I think the area is prospering because of this. See, the whole... because there is a school created, so the public transport has started coming to that area, and there are some vendors who have started getting close to that. So, you know, it will bring prosperity. So it's a very small drop in the ocean, but, you know, it is still...
But it's creative. You take what you know and what you can do, and you take action along with your peers who are in the same boat, right? So many
That's
of you
right.
that went to Rawalpindi Medical College, is that
yes.
right? University?
Yes.
Have gotten together all you American and Canadian
We get together once a month on telephone, and we have some other projects going too. We have a burn center that we are running, and we also have a dialysis unit that we are running from here. And the girls' school is our crown jewel. We try to get money together. I recently had an exhibition of my photographs. I do a site thing with my photography, and we had an exhibition at Miles Memorial Hospital Gallery and raised about $5,000 selling my not so good pictures, and hopefully this will help us expand the school, for at least add one or two rooms for now.
Yeah, several months more of education. How many girls attend the school?
Now we are 123 girls, and we will start in fifth grade this year. And we'll keep adding. I would welcome people if they want to get in touch with me and contribute to this. And there is a website as well,
which I will also link to on both Facebook and on the website.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. What's your hope, your long-term hope for this program, to expand to high school?
I think in Pakistan, high school is 10th grade. And that's it's a good end point, because 10 years of education is better than no education. So I think for girls, most of the people get up to 14th grade, or which is called the bachelor's degree, but they're trying to change that, and the Higher Education Commission in Pakistan is changing that, and they are trying to change the two-year program into a four-year program, just like anywhere else. But matriculation, as it is called, secondary school certification exam, So if you can get them up to speed, up to the high school, and that's what I did for my high school, 10 grades, and if they can get to that and get their secondary school education, then they can actually use that as a stepping stone to go to college or university degrees if they want to pursue that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that we will keep this going as long as we can. And it's not a whole lot of money, but as I said, getting those $1,500 every month can be a problem at times because there are all sorts of unexpected expenses. Recently, we got a message that the government of Pakistan had a visit there, and they said, well, you need to have barbed fence against this. So we had an extra expense of putting barbed wire. I mean, that's...
Yeah. It's kind of like you're standing at a wishing pond and throwing in those pennies, right, and making wishes because these girls, who knows what happens? You're just...
But
maybe.
It was so heartwarming to talk to these girls this time, and it was so heartwarming that they were actually getting education and they were broadening their horizons.
You saw it in action.
We saw that.
Rifat, you are not only helping people locally as a surgeon, but you're also changing lives and trajectory of society back in Pakistan through education and healthcare. It would be hard to assess your full contribution to both of these communities. I wish you the very best in your collaborative foundation, actively changing the world. And thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me here today.
And thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainersspeak.com. And check out more related information at facebook.com/NewMainersSpeak. New Mainers Speak is also rebroadcast on Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on WERU-FM in Blue Hill and Bangor area. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Rifat Zadi. Rifat, will you introduce the song you've selected to close today's program?
Yes, yeah, sure. So this is a tribute to all the people who have died in this war on terror. About 50,000 Pakistani civilians have lost their lives since 2003. And this piece is a tribute to all these fallen people. And this was actually sung by multiple people, one line at a time. And unfortunately, one of the main singers in this was slain in broad daylight just around the time when this piece came out. It's part of the Coke Studio number 9. And I always have tears when I hear these words.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ye hai tumhare naam. Is mitti ke liye behte lahu ke naam. Mere dil mein base jaan se pyare Pakistan ke naam.
वफा की तस्वीरों
तुम्हें वतन की हवाएं
सलाम कहती है
तेरा ही हक के शहीदों
अल्लाह
लगाने आग जो
शहीदों
चले
जाम पी कर तुम रसूल पाक ने बाहों में ले लिया होगा अली तुम्हारी शुजात पे झूमते होंगे
हुसैन
شہید ہو